This is an ABC podcast.
Karen Rostevsky's husband faces a committal hearing to decide whether he'll stand trial for her murder.
To Melbourne now, where a committal hearing is underway for Australia's most senior Catholic, George Pell.
What's the point of Victoria's committal process? Does it deliver fast and fair justice? Hello, Damien Carrick with you. Welcome to The Law Report. Today we're probing the role of committals. Essentially, a committal hearing asks a series of questions.
This is a committal hearing for the Cardinal, and it will decide if there's enough evidence against him for him to be committed to stand trial. We heard that several witnesses, both complainants in the case and their relatives, will be giving evidence via video link from remote locations.
And as we'll hear later, at Cardinal Pell's committal, the magistrate dropped some of the charges and the prosecution withdrew others. We all want fair criminal trials that uphold the rights of the accused, and we all want trials that are quick, efficient, and don't traumatise victims. Victoria is currently considering whether its committal process upholds or undermines these ideals.
It is the preliminary hearing so that evidence can be tested, disclosure issues can be explored, and it really is to hopefully make sure that the trial process runs as smoothly as possible.
I think we need to abolish the committals process. I don't think that there's strong enough evidence of its benefit.
Two opposite views on Victoria's committal system. It's the most comprehensive in Australia. Brianna Proud is a senior policy and research officer with the Victorian Law Reform Commission, which is currently looking at how well committals work.
A committal hearing was historically about separating the wheat from the chaff. And essentially what that means is a committal hearing used to be used to filter out cases that were weak or misconceived or that the police or prosecution were proceeding with without a proper evidentiary base.
Brianna Proud, around Australia, there are different systems. So what states and territories have committals or still have committals, and what states and territories have essentially done away with them or diluted them down?
Even jurisdictions where we commonly say they quote unquote don't have committals anymore, every single jurisdiction still starts cases in the lower courts and they go through some kind of process for them to move up to the higher courts. There are a lot of basic administrative steps at the start of a criminal case that higher courts shouldn't have to deal with, and that it's too expensive for them to deal with, and that lower courts can do so in a much more resource efficient way. The best example is WA, which has largely gotten rid of committals. Cases still start in the lower court, in the magistrate's court, but they move up to the higher courts at an earlier stage than in other jurisdictions. And critically, when people talk about WA as an example of getting rid of committals, they also talk about the fact that there's no pretrial cross-examination in the lower court in that state.
Okay, so you've got WA at one end of the spectrum, and I think Tasmania and Queensland and New South Wales a little bit along the spectrum. Then you've got the ACT, NT, South Australia, and then you've got Victoria at the far end of the spectrum. People think of Victoria as having the most complete committal process because they have, what, the cross-examination of prosecution witnesses at this kind of pre-trial committal process.
Yeah, so cross-examination is available in lots of states in Australia, but this happens much more regularly in Victoria than it happens in other states. And obviously that's a critical element of deciding whether committal proceedings as we currently know them in Victoria should remain.
That seems to be the heart of the kind of the debate, the cross-examination of prosecution witnesses. So what are the arguments for committals? In a nutshell, what are the arguments for keeping this system as it is?
The major argument for keeping it is that what the statistics show us is that lots of cases that start in the committal stream of the magistrate's court actually resolve before needing to have a trial. And you can understand that a criminal trial is the most expensive point of the criminal justice system, and it also takes a long time to get there. We know that of the approximately 3,000 cases that start in the committal stream every year, nearly a third of those resolve summarily. Now, what that means is that at some point during the committal proceeding, the prosecution have withdrawn any indictable, being serious criminal offences, leaving only types of offences that a magistrate can deal with summarily. We also know that another third of cases resolve to a plea of guilty at some point throughout the committal process. So that case goes to the county or Supreme Court for a plea of guilty and a sentence as opposed to for a trial.
And that saves everybody money.
Exactly.
It's great for the prosecution witnesses, the victims of a crime, because they don't have to go through a full trial. It gets resolved more quickly. It's great for the state because things have been resolved. And it's maybe good, and it's great for the accused in the sense that their matters are resolved more quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
But what's the flip side?
Well, the flip side is that witnesses and those who advocate on behalf of victims and witnesses say that it's an unnecessary duplication of a process that causes a lot of harm and distress, and it shouldn't happen at this particular point in a criminal case. Cross-examination should only happen during a trial.
Let's hear from Victoria's Commissioner for Victims' Rights, Fiona McCormack. This is what she has to say about the process.
When I talk to victims, when they talk to me about the committal process, there's themes that I hear over and over. Words like horrific, words like harrowing. I spoke with one woman this week who said, I shouldn't have had to have gone through that. Nobody should have. In fact, it can be so harrowing that it can impact on a person's ability or their willingness to participate in the criminal trial process. The other thing, you know, in terms of telling their story, retelling their story, reconnecting with that trauma, they talk about things like having flashbacks, or they can talk about things like having panic attacks, even like literally vomiting either before or after giving evidence. So it can be extremely traumatic. And when you think about the number of times that a person might have to tell that story in writing, you know, a written statement, providing a written statement in the committals process and in the trial process. And in the context of committal process, it's cross-examination. And in the trial process, cross-examination.
So what's the problem in particular with committals as opposed to the trial process? Is it simply having to do it twice?
No, I don't think it's just that. The trouble is the test for committals is irrelevant. If we work from the assumption that the committals are necessary to test the strength of a prosecution's case, when we look at the data of how many matters are actually discharged at the committal juncture of the criminal trial process, just going on last year's figures, that's 1.4%, so very, very few. Against, when we weigh that against the trauma of having to give evidence and being cross-examined, we have to question the necessity of this, whether this is still necessary at this point in time.
But are there post-committal negotiations and plea bargaining that take place once, if you like, the arguments have been aired in the committals? Maybe that's an advantage, because then maybe a lot of cases don't make it all the way to trial because the defence have gone, okay, there's a strong case against us, let's fold or let's negotiate.
If there is a necessity to test the evidence, that can be done. But let's do it by exception rather than having it as the rule would be the approach that I would recommend.
Fiona McCormack, Victoria's Commissioner for Victims' Rights. Brianna Proud from the Victorian Law Reform Commission. So there's that issue around disclosure. In this process, what has the Victorian Office of Public Prosecutions been arguing or been telling you?
The DPP has told us that her position is that cross-examination during a committal proceeding doesn't equate in a legal sense to disclosure, and that better practices earlier in a case around police disclosure of evidence, both evidence that supports the offences that have been charged, but also exculpatory material as well, better disclosure of that in a setting that is not related to cross-examination and that is between the legal parties, so to speak, can achieve what is achieved by cross-examination in respect of disclosure.
In other words, the prosecution can disclose its case, but it can all be done on paper. You don't necessarily have to have a kind of a formal court hearing to do that.
Correct. But then there are those on the other side, and those are often referred to as, I suppose, representing the views of defence practitioners, so Victoria Legal Aid, the Criminal Bar Association, the Law Institute of Victoria, who say that there's so much critical information that regularly comes out during cross-examination at a committal hearing, and that that's one of the strengths of the Victorian system compared to other jurisdictions, in that we are able to resolve cases and to ensure that whatever cases can't resolve and do go through to trial are much more targeted and the issues are much more narrow because of what is already known to the parties as a result of cross-examination.
Melbourne criminal barrister Jason Galachi is a committee member of the Victorian Criminal Bar Association. He acts for both defence and prosecution and has appeared in over 300 committals.
It's a filter, really, to make sure that only appropriate cases, that is serious criminal cases, go to trial in either the county court or the Supreme Court because of the resources that are then expended when you do run a trial in either of those courts. So it's a bit of a check and balance on the decision to lay charges against an accused person. The reality is that the vast majority of cases make it through the committal stage because it's a pretty low test, but there are some cases that fail it. And so therefore you avoid the need to run what are often lengthy and costly criminal trials when they are stopped at a committal stage.
And Jason Galachi, tell me, how long do these little mini trials, these committals take, and what evidence is heard at them?
It depends on the case. And I would say that most committals would conclude within 1 to 2 days. Now, of course, there are exceptions to that where you have much bigger cases where they can run for weeks.
The criticism is sometimes made that making prosecution witnesses, victims of crime, complainants, making them give evidence at these committals, it can be traumatic and unnecessary.
Look, as to the issue about trauma, Damien, there is no doubt that giving evidence is difficult. And especially it is difficult if they are recounting serious acts of violence or sexual assault committed against them. But that has to be balanced. And this is where I would disagree with the use of the word unnecessary, because from a defence perspective, it's not unnecessary. Where there are serious criminal allegations being made against accused people, and if they're found guilty, they're going to face significant jail sentences. And there's a need to ensure that people who are alleged to have committed serious criminal offences have a fair hearing. And part of that is to make sure that they fully understand the case against them before they proceed to trial. And can I just say this, because it ties into the disclosure issue, but also the issue you just raised. I get, from the perspective of advancing complainant and victim's interests, that it's very difficult and traumatic for them to give evidence. But the reason that, out of fairness, an accused needs, at least in my view, to cross-examine these people at a preliminary hearing, is that, getting back to the fact that the police control the statement-taking process, often in those statements that are made by complainants, victims, and also civilian witnesses, there is material that assists an accused person that is left out. Often it's because the witness, when making their statement, is not asked by police or investigators about those matters. And or the witness tells the police about something and the police say to them, oh, look, that's not really relevant. Don't put that in your statement. Now, that sort of information is the type of disclosure that comes out at a committal. And it happens very routinely where a witness at committal, in response to questions, will reveal something significant and often to the benefit of an accused. And when asked, well, look, why wasn't that in your statement? They'll say often, well, look, I wasn't asked, or I told the police about it and they told me it wasn't relevant.
I've been told that defence counsel are sometimes more robust and more aggressive when cross-examining witnesses at committals as opposed to at trials. And it's been put to me that that's because defence counsel don't have to worry about alienating a jury. They can go for the jugular, if you like, whereas they wouldn't be prepared to do that before a jury.
I must say that's not my experience. I understand why that might be something that people think could happen. But in fact, the whole purpose of a committal is to ask, from a defence perspective, a number of open-ended questions to see if you can get this extra information out. And so often you ask questions without putting specific propositions to witnesses, without specifically attacking them, because they are things that you do when you've got to run your case at trial. And when I say attack, I mean challenge their version of events. And at trial, defence counsel have an obligation to actually positively put their defence, which often means that the robust cross-examination happens at trial in front of a jury because it has to. that obligation at a preliminary hearing is not there to put your case. So my experience is, as a general rule, that often more robust cross-examination and aggressive cross-examination, in fact, happens at a trial because of the obligations that defence counsel have. The main focus of a committal is getting disclosure. And it's getting disclosure in a sense where you want to find out as much information as you can. And often the most effective way to do that is not to be aggressive and not to be provocative towards a witness. You want to get as much information out of them at that preliminary hearing so that you can then work out where you can and can't go when a jury trial is being run.
Jason Gulacsy, what do you hope comes out of this Victorian Law Reform Commission inquiry into committals?
Certainly the Criminal Bar Association is not of the view that the committal system should not be looked at. It should be. And perhaps there can be some improvements and amendments and tweaks to the system, and we would certainly welcome that. The concern we have is that to just throw it out entirely would be something that we would have concerns about, given the important role that it does play.
This is The Law Report on Radio National, on your radio, and of course also available as a podcast. I'm Damien Carrick. Today we're looking at the pros and cons of committals. The Victorian Law Reform Commission's Brianna Proud has attempted to find statistics that would help answer which system around Australia produces the best outcomes. But it's difficult because each system's unique. She believes that one of the best comparisons is the time it takes to finalise a case. In 2017-2018, Victoria performed relatively well. 82% of its county or district court cases resolved within 12 months, while in New South Wales, the figure was only 22%. But she acknowledges that there have been recent reforms to the committal system in that state. So what do Victorian judges think about committals? The submission from the county or district court revealed that judges are split down the middle. About half like having the lower courts do all the grunt work. The other half would prefer to have total control over a case from the word go. The submission from those lower courts, the Victorian Magistrates Court, or local court as it's known in other jurisdictions, also makes interesting reading. It talks in detail about a series of high-profile cases and argues that committals work very well.
In the days after his wife's disappearance, Boris Rostevsky appealed for help to find her. Now he's been committed to stand trial for her murder. Karen Rostevsky was last seen at the couple's Avondale Heights home in June 2016. Prosecutors allege Boris Rostevsky killed her and then transported her body in Ms. Rostevsky's black Mercedes to bushland near Mount Macedon. The defence had argued that the charge should be downgraded to manslaughter due to a lack of evidence around intent, but the prosecution's case placed weight on Mr. Rostevsky's actions after his wife disappeared. Magistrate Suzanne Cameron agreed. Given the nature, extent and duration of the post-defence conduct, I'm of the view that it would be open to a jury to find that Mr. Rostevsky caused the death of Karen Rostevsky and had murderous intent.
Throughout this committal hearing, Boris Rostevsky has stared straight ahead. And that didn't change today when the magistrate announced he'd been committed to stand trial for murder. When asked how he responded to the charge, he said in a clear voice, not guilty.
Approximately 1 month after the committal hearing finished and he was committed to trial in the Supreme Court on murder, a plea of guilty was entered to manslaughter. And the Magistrates Court told us in their submission that the process of the committal proceeding and the cross-examination of witnesses during that committal proceeding played a critical role in that plea of guilty being entered and avoiding the need for a trial.
So that's a win for the state, that's a win for issues about whether or not it should have been a murder or manslaughter conviction. But people would say that that's good for the surviving members of the family because at least the process has been shortened and a conviction has been entered,
well,
obtained.
The magistrates' court say that it has meant that those witnesses only have to give evidence once and that, yes, the state has avoided the need and the cost of a expensive murder trial. Obviously, there's debate about whether the plea of guilty itself to that particular charge was right, but Yeah. I can't really comment on that, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess that's a separate issue about whether he should have stood for murder as opposed to manslaughter. I guess it's a separate question. But the state was successful in obtaining a guilty plea, and he's going to jail for a long, long time. And his sentence was recently actually increased.
It was.
On appeal. Look, another really interesting case that they talk about in their submission is the case of Jason Ashman.
Late last night, 26-year-old Dwayne Wright was shot dead near the front door of his Altona home. A home smeared in blood, the grisly aftermath of a fatal shooting. In the moments leading up to the murder, neighbours say they heard yelling, with an argument erupting between several people.
One of them, she was encouraging one of them to actually go inside and trying to, you know, split it up.
A 48-year-old man was arrested this afternoon, now likely to be charged with murder.
Jason Ashman basically shot his neighbour in a neighbour dispute, essentially, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
And his case is really interesting because they're pointing out the concern needs to be about vulnerable witnesses, and they say this highlights that maybe sometimes committals can help vulnerable witnesses. Tell me about that case.
So that is a case where, again, a committal proceeding was listed in relation to a murder charge. During the course of the committal proceedings, a magistrate said that there were 16 witnesses in that case who should be cross-examined during the committal hearing. The committal hearing was listed, and the first witness gave evidence. And
the daughter of the accused, I believe.
Yes. The first witness in that committal proceeding gave evidence, and as a consequence of that evidence, the prosecution and the defence came to an agreement, and the accused, Ashman, pleaded guilty to a charge of manslaughter. The Magistrates Court pointed that particular case because the next two witnesses who were to give evidence in that committal proceeding, the next was a child and the one after was cognitively impaired. So they say that this is a good example of a committal proceeding working as it should to avoid vulnerable witnesses from having to participate more than they need to in the criminal justice system. So it means that not only did those two witnesses, along with the other 15 witnesses as well, not only did they not have to give evidence to the committal, but they didn't have to then give evidence at a trial either. The Magistrates Court used that as an example of a committal proceeding encouraging early resolution and the different aspects of a committal proceeding leading to an outcome earlier than that outcome could have been achieved in a higher, more expensive jurisdiction.
Brianna Proud, one of the other cases which is referred to in the Magistrates Court submission is a very interesting case. It's a recent case from the WA District Court. And again, WA, there are no committals. This was the case of Lee. There, the trial had to be aborted after 7 months of stop, start. It was a jury trial because of non-disclosure by the prosecution. Now, as I understand it, this was a trial involving a number of offences, but it involved basically market gardeners who were charged with using illegal foreign workers, and I think there might have been money laundering charges.
The charges against Hu Kwong Nguyen, Min Khan Lee, Michael Lee and two others have been abandoned. It follows the scuttling of a trial earlier this year after issues arose regarding evidence not being disclosed to the defence. Today, the Chief Judge Kevin Slate called for an independent inquiry, potentially to be carried out by a barrister. He was scathing of the way the prosecution had handled the case, saying it had been extremely difficult to prosecute and there'd been an enormous imposition on the resources of the court, which had been wasted.
It involved a large volume of telephone intercept material. That material, it's described by the judge as being drip-fed to the defence. And critically, at a point in the trial after several months of hearing and before a jury, a large additional volume of telephone intercept material was uncovered. And when it was given to the defence, they said that they would need over 8 weeks to properly consider all of this material given its volume. The Magistrates Court referred us to that case because they say it's a good example of the fact that without a committal proceeding and without proper processes around disclosure before a trial commences, not only are trial listings longer, but you also run the risk that because of a failure to properly disclose prior to the start of a trial, it can jeopardise whether a trial could actually run fairly and run to completion.
The Chief Judge said the failure of the case has had an impact on the courts, the Legal Aid Commission, jurors and the Sheriff's Office. In addition, he said there was the psychological burden on the accused.
Brianna Proud, what role did the Victorian committal process have in the prosecution of Cardinal George Pell?
Prior to the beginning of the committal hearing, George Pell faced a number of different historical child sex offences.
With different complainants.
Relating to a number of different complainants. And throughout the course of the committal proceeding, the court heard from 41 witnesses, and three important things happened. Firstly, the prosecution withdrew a number of charges that related to some complainants. Secondly, the magistrate who presided over that case, Belinda Wallington, decided that in relation to some other offences relating to some other complainants, there wasn't evidence of sufficient weight to support a conviction, and she discharged some of those offences. In relation to some other complainants, as we all know, George Pell was committed to stand trial, and he did.
And he was found guilty in the county court, but that's been appealed to the Court of Appeal, and then that, again, is being appealed by his defence team to the High Court, and we'll see what happens ultimately.
That's correct. Yep. What happened in Pell's committal hearing, being that the magistrate discharged some offences but committed him on other offences, happens in approximately 60 cases every year. What also happens every year in approximately 10 cases is a magistrate will discharge the entire case. So advocates for the test for committal point to those statistics and say whilst they're low, it's a, and they equate to approximately 2% of all cases in the committal system, that 2% is still very critical because that means there are a number of offences that are charged without sufficient evidence, and there are 10 cases approximately every year where there's no sufficient evidence to support any type of prosecution against the person accused. And those who say that the test for committal should be retained say that that's critical for everyone in the community because it places a check and balance on police charging power and the power of the Director of Public Prosecutions to prosecute cases.
What's the best way forward, Fiona McCormack? We're having this conversation in Victoria about whether, you know, about committals. What's the way forward?
Well, firstly, I think we need to abolish the committals process. I don't think that there's strong enough evidence of its benefit. I agree with the DPP's proposal that we replace this with a pretrial process that undertakes a case management model, a far more respectful process while maintaining a very fair and transparent undertaking to ensure that no innocent person is found guilty.
So the rights of the accused are protected.
That's it. That's it. I think we can do this better. And I think we've been moving closer to really considering the needs of the victim in a progressive way. I really believe that the DPP's model is the next step where we have to go to see a better balance.
Fiona McCormack, Victoria's Commissioner for Victims' Rights. And before her, Brianna Proud from the Victorian Law Reform Commission. It's currently working on its final report to be handed to the Victorian Attorney General by the 30th of March. That's the Law Report. Thanks to producer Anita Barrow and to sound engineer Chrissy Miltiadu. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more law.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.